Hello everyone, my name is David, and thank you for tuning into our podcast. Here at Crypto Now, we explore the latest trends that are happening in crypto, from the metaverse, NFTs, to a behind-the-scenes look at what makes the industry tick. We speak to the subject matter experts and find out their perspectives, hopes, and expectations. The Crypto Now podcast is an extension of the Nexus World Book movement, the world's first crypto straight-through processing network and largest aggregated liquidity pool, designed to empower exchanges and to bring greater institutional adoption for digital assets through a universal liquidity standard. So now we're in a climate where crypto is starting to gain more legitimacy as a financial product. Right? For many people, the only way to make a profit from crypto is through price movements of a particular asset. And this somewhat drastically limits profit to only periods when price movements are favorable. So with today's topic being on exploring other profit models in cryptocurrency, we have with us now Holdenaut, a Singapore-based crypto interest-earning platform that is here to share with us how users can get their crypto work smarter for them through passive income generation and affiliate marketing. Hello, CT. It's good to have you on our show.
Yep. Hi, Davian. It's good to be on this show as well.
Yep. A little bit about CT. He's the community manager here at Holdenaut. So crypto wasn't what he really envisioned doing when he first made his first foray into the working world in 2018. However, through a turn of events, he's now a proud ambassador of digital assets and what it means for the financial markets. And we also have with us here Cecilia Chan, who is our head of liquidity for Asia and the executive director of Brockton Prime Markets Limited. Cecilia was a former vice president at Singapore Exchange and a senior manager at Exchange and Regulatory Relations in Hang Seng Indexes. So this has imbued her with a strong understanding of compliance across multiple jurisdictions. So without further ado, let's start the discussion. Right, there's been a lot of changes in the markets recently, Cecilia, especially when it comes to adoption. Right. So why do you think this is happening, Cecilia? Can you tell us a bit more about the state of crypto adoption now?
Sure. Thanks, David. Thanks for having me on the show as well. So what is the state of the crypto now? What we are seeing is that they are getting more and more worldwide adoptions. It has picked up pace in 2021, and we can see a high adoption rate happening in the emerging countries such as Vietnam, India, and Africa. And what are we seeing? Why are the rate of adoption so high in these emerging countries? It's because we have a high usage of remittance transactions, there's financial inclusion, you know. So there's a lot of suburbans, people out there who does not have access to banking facilities. So crypto seems to be like the best way to send money across borders, and all these all powered by the P2P platform that has been very rampant. It's been there's a lot of platform going around, and also of course we have also like Holdenaut that can do wealth preservations. You know, that's becoming like a financial planning. So all this kind of empowered the adoption in these emerging countries. For the developing and the developed countries like the US or Europe, we can see like the institutional investment has also started to pick up. It's almost the driver for the crypto adoptions. Institutions are then increasingly looking at the digital assets right now. And this is what we're talking about, is even beyond the Bitcoin. It can even be in terms of, you know, investing in the blockchain company in order to gain exposure, right? This is in form of funds or even funds of funds, right? So the institutions are taking a stake in the crypto or the blockchain world. So this is something very encouraging, because this will then lead to mainstream adoption, right? Because when the insti and the retail come into play, then it becomes almost natural that this is an asset class that the world is adopting. And the last one, the observation that I have is that now that centralized exchanges, I mean, next to DeFi platform, right? We can see a lot of crypto transaction happening on the centralized exchanges. And most users usually start their crypto journey on a centralized exchange. because it seems like, you know, the most transparent, the most easiest, you know, onboarding is almost seamless. You do it online. So it became almost like a ritual for any new crypto users. When they want to start a crypto journey, they will do it most likely with the centralized exchange. And we can see that about 60% of the transactions are all happening on the centralized exchanges.
Oh, interesting, interesting. So as now that you speak about centralized exchanges, right, I realize a large portion of them rely, you know, are very dependent on, you know, stable coins, right, like the USDT, USDC, and, you know, stable coins like that. So can you share with me, I mean, given that, you know, it's my first foray into the crypto world, right, what are stable coins and why do they exist?
So stable coins are basically crypto assets, which its value is actually linked or backed by real assets. For example, like the USDT you mentioned is actually backed by a real USD being held by a Tether, right? So it actually tends to be more stable compared to like Bitcoin, which is not really backed by any asset, right? So the value tends to remain very stable. And it's usually used for investment or payment because due to your peg characteristic, right? So I guess users are then more comfortable, you know, that, oh, so today my USDT is worth 1.35, tomorrow is worth 1. You know, they don't get comfortable when their value get, you know, too devalued over like just in the day. So so stable coins then become a very popular form of payment exchange, a store of value due to its stable nature, and it's likely that, you know, the stable coins will then gain a higher possibility to be adopted mainstream earlier than the rest of the coins.
I see. I understand for Holdenot, they deal a fair bit in stable coins as well. Right. We had a brief look at your platform, and you know, Holdenot carries quite a fair bit of stable coins for both USDT and USDC. So you know, what are your perspectives on such stable coins, and what do you think are the future for them? CT?
Oh, this is for me. Sorry about that. Yep. Okay, so for myself, what do I think about the stablecoin future? So stablecoins, why I feel they are very relevant to the crypto space over here is because that, as we all know it, crypto is an extremely volatile asset. Within the next 10 seconds, 15 seconds, or even 5 seconds itself, right? Just a tweet from one very influential individual can send prices either surging 50 or 100%, or can get prices of Bitcoin tumbling down, as we can see last year itself. Just a tweet from Elon Musk itself saying that, oh, Tesla won't be taking any more payments related to Bitcoin, and then we saw Bitcoin tumble down from 60k all the way to 50k, and then reaching about 45k. So for ourselves, right, how not see stablecoin in this way? It is a cryptocurrency that attempts to create price stability in its own value. Like, as what Cecilia has mentioned, right, Tether, USDC, they are backed by assets which it's able to peg the stable coin one-to-one to the USD value itself. For example, USD coin was actually created by Coinbase, and there has been recent audits, and it has been proven that up to about 70 to 73% of the USD coin, right, is actually backed by cash equivalent assets and USD assets itself. So having this kind of like reports being out there in the news, right, it actually gives investors actually more confidence in stablecoin itself. And knowing that, for example, at our platform Holdenot, right, you are able to earn interest of up to 12.73% APY on your stablecoin itself, right? The decision is actually very, 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 very clear as compared to depositing your money in a bank where you can only earn probably about 1%, 1.5% interest. Yeah, so that's our stance over here. At Holonaut, you can you have the option to go into Bitcoin, Ethereum, if you are able to stomach that kind of volatile risk. But if you unable to stomach the kind of volatile risk and you want a kind of a safer option to be in crypto, right, then stablecoins are the way to go for you.
Well, it seems to me that, you know, a lot of investors and a lot of people are interested in finding stability amidst the volatility, right? I mean, sure, they enjoy the price changes, the price swings, but amidst all of that, they still want a degree of certainty and a degree of, you know, some sort of rules, right, that the worlds operate by. Which brings me to my next point, right? You know, crypto, we see crypto has been under a lot of scrutiny, right? And, you know, the problem with it, it's still a pretty new field. Right, and because regulations can still be quite opaque in this new field, Cecilia, what do you see might be the future of crypto in these times?
So, what we are seeing in recent days, right, we have MAS issuing guidelines on crypto advertising, restricting. It's basically to protect the auntie and uncles on the street, you know, that people who are jumping into products that they do not know, and then potentially losing a lot of money, and then after that, MAS will get into a lot of trouble, right? I mean, they will have lots of issue with all these retail investors. So, but this is actually changing. This is in comparison to maybe like 3 years or 4 years ago, where we didn't have a lot of clarity on the regulatory landscape here. Okay, so now, the regulators are getting their hands on, you know, they are trying to define the scope, the where crypto exchanges can operate, where crypto's investments can be carried out. But you can be very, very sure that all the regulators aims to do mainly focus on two things. One is investor protection. The other is the money laundering. So this is the two very key concerns of regulators. And for sure, all the regulations will then circle around these two focus points, right? So the balance is that the regulators need to find a balance here where they control enough, but not stifle the creativity in, you know, pushing out crypto products or even the P2P platforms or even DeFi, you know. So there must be a balance, a very thin line that, you know, once you cross that and then, you know, people get restricted and then there's a lot of product that doesn't come out because of this regulation. Many regulators like Singapore, Hong Kong, Korea, they have been using existing standards or regulations that is already existence in their capital market, for example, the security law, or the Payment Service Act, like MAS. So they are using the current standard that they apply to the current intermediaries and making them applicable to crypto operators. Okay, so it kind of gave us a little bit of comfort here where, you know, MAS is looking actively at it, or, you know, other regulators are looking actively in it. It does give the retail a little bit more comfort point here is, oh, you know, I have a recourse, or, you know, MAS is doing something to ensure the integrity of these operators, right? So with all this, when MAS is convinced, or rather the regulators are convinced that, you know, retails are then are investing in crypto in a well-informed manner, then we can see that the retail investing will start to increase at a even higher speed than right now. Okay. So then you will have a lot of crypto exchanges coming in with retail education, and this is where I'm seeing crypto going to develop into a huge retail space after the institution adoption.
Okay, makes sense. So I guess what I'm trying to also understand here is that, you know, with introductions of new regulations all this time, right? They I mean, like you said, it's an ever evolving space, right? You know, with all these new regulations coming in, right? It's definitely going to affect the way we see crypto at least in the next 5 years, right? What, aside from regulation shaping the future of crypto, what sort of issues do you think might affect the industry as a whole, other issues?
I think the very important issue here would be cybersecurity. We have some hacks going on for a couple of crypto exchanges recently. So I'm sure cybersecurity is always a pain point of all the tech solution providers. So when hacks or attacks happens, it often results in, you know, loss of the cryptocurrency. You know, it just go missing or it goes into some illegal kind of wallets, you know. And that's where your clients or the users will start to lose confidence, you know, in a certain platform. And then that's where you can see there will be some consolidation of platforms that, you know, generally they provide a very high level of security here. I'm sure Hodonauts will be one of those, right? And the other factors that might affect how crypto develop in future is the entry of the CBDC. In full term is called the central bank digital currency. Yeah. So entry of this CBDC will also affect crypto in some sense, because we are all very familiar with central banks and we are all very comfortable with using, you know, currencies like Sing dollar, right? Will you use rupiah instead of Sing dollar, or will you use Bitcoin instead of Sing dollar? That kind it's a challenge here. So for traditional investors, they will be easy, you know, I will just use G7 or Sing dollar or some currency that, you know, issued by the central bank. I mean, it's a concept that might change in future, but when the central bank steps in it with their digital currency, then you can potentially see some, you know, users swing from crypto over to the digital currencies. Yeah, and maybe Hodonauts can also do a Sing dollar, X Sing dollar kind of holding rate, right?
Yep, CT. So, like Cecilia mentioned, there have been quite a few, you know, security breaches in the world of crypto and, you know, exchanges lately. So, you know, from Hodonauts perspective, you know, what are the key things that, you know, they should look out for in terms of security? I mean, be it for exchanges or custodians such as yourself, right? What are the key things that are most important for people that are coming into crypto, the key security, the key security points they should look out for? Any perspective on that?
Yeah, sure. I would actually like to write on Cecilia's response with regards to security. So, for ourselves, right, why we say security is one of the issue here, because like what Cecilia mentioned, there has been recent news about exchanges, platforms, wallets having their servers hacked, and then this actually resulted in losses in the hundreds of millions of dollars. We're not only talking about hundreds of dollars, thousands, we're talking about hundreds of millions of dollars. For this point, right, this not only caused fear amongst the crypto community, but it actually further reinforces the already negative connotations people who are not into crypto have about crypto. For example, right, whenever a news headline from, let's say, CNA, Today Online, come out about crypto, right, the headlines would most always, right, skew towards the negative side of crypto, saying that, oh, this particular exchange got hacked, and this particular wallet got hacked. And then they will always put in a blockchain system got hacked, blockchain actually got hacked. And this will let people who are not very savvy or who are not really into crypto, right, think that, oh, I thought last time people say blockchain very secure, how come blockchain can hack? So that's actually a wrong perception over there. Blockchain is actually extremely secure, which makes it near impossible to hack because of the thousands of nodes that are around the world, right? Like, for example, Bitcoin, there are thousands of nodes all around the world. And individually, you can even run your own Bitcoin node, right, to secure the network itself. So because of this, right, it is actually a very strong deterrence against hackers to hack. Because to hack the Bitcoin blockchain, right, you not only have to go through one system, you have to go through thousands of systems one by one, which would actually make your losses more than what you can actually gain from hacking the system itself. So there's this wrong perception about blockchain and exchanges and platforms like Cardano itself. People think that, oh, when a platform gets hacked, right, it means that a blockchain is hacked. But no, it's actually the server. It's actually the server where a certain platform stores their crypto in that got hacked. And usually these servers are the ones that are connected to the internet, and which the crypto community calls it the hot wallet system itself. So that being said, right, us at Holdernot, right, we actually take a security first approach, and we do not use any hot wallets to store user funds, which are really vulnerable to online attacks. Instead, right, we actually work together with Fireblocks, and then we use their multi-party computation wallet infrastructure, where each user will be assigned a unique wallet address generated by Fireblocks. So that actually protects their anonymity as well. So if you are a Holdernot user and you send funds to another account, right, it will actually mask your Holdernot wallet address itself, so that people cannot determine the value of your wallet. People cannot know who you are, and then it will be actually sent to a batch wallet address that Holdernot controls, and the withdrawals will be processed. So when cryptocurrencies are deposited with Holdernot via the unit address given to our users, right, they are actually received through the Fireblocks, the secure wallet infrastructure, they call it MPC wallet. So on the back end, once the funds come in, right, Holdernot will instantly transfer the cryptocurrencies to our self-custody core wallets, or it will instantly go on lend to borrowers to generate yield. So I would like to actually go on a little bit more to speak about liquidity. So some users then might be asking, oh, so how does Holdernot deal with the issue of liquidity over here? Because since we say that we do not have fund hot wallets, how are we going to, you know, have certain funds that users can withdraw quickly? So this is where Holdernot has to say that, oh, less than 1-2% of our funds are in hot wallets just for the sole purpose of processing transactions. This is because, bring us back to the point of security, if we leave 100% in of our AUM in hot wallets, right, that is really poses a very major threat to the system, and that would actually jeopardize what we are doing here at Holdernot itself. Yeah.
So would you, I mean, from what you've explained to me so far, it seems like Holdernot is adopting something that's very akin to what traditional banks are doing as well, right? A bit of a fractional reserve sort of, where they keep a big amount of money in custody, and they keep a small percentage out for, you know, the daily transactions that they require, and that's how it does it emulate any structure that we know in the current markets right now?
Emulate any structure that we know of in the current market. So for example, I will actually draw comparisons to the largest exchange in the world, Binance. So Binance, right, before you can make a withdrawal, right, you have to actually go through several security processes, right, before you can even withdraw your funds. And they even set daily limits on how much funds you can withdraw from your wallet itself. If you ever own a Binance wallet and you try to withdraw funds, right, you really find it quite a hassle to withdraw said funds, even though it's $100 from your account itself, because you realize that, oh, not only you have to provide 2FA when you log into your account, you have to even whitelist your wallet. Once you whitelist your wallet, that's really two layers of security. Right? The third layer, you have to do an email verification. You have to do another 2FA verification. And then you have to do a phone verification before you can withdraw your wallets. And when you withdraw your funds from the wallet, right, depending on the network, right, okay, they will send you another email confirmation. That's really six layers of security before you can even withdraw your funds. So for us at Holdernot right here, right, okay, I can say that our security is not as top-notch as Binance, but we are trying to emulate what these established companies are doing, and to make sure that, you know, when users withdraw their funds, right, they are the users themselves and they are not hackers. So when users withdraw their funds, right, we will allow them the opportunity to whitelist addresses to withdraw their funds to. We'll tell them that they need to include their 2FA when they are withdrawing, and then there's a final confirmation where an email will be sent to their registered email address to do a confirmation that they are withdrawing these funds. That being said, right, there is actually another layer behind where if you are withdrawing certain funds beyond a threshold, then that will actually trigger manual approval from my directors itself, which is another security layer to make sure that you are who you say you are and that the funds are being withdrawn legitimately.
I see. So I understand the perspective, right? We're always trying to straddle the middle point, the best point between security and convenience, right? Everybody's trying to do that, even for banks, but you know, it often comes at one comes at the cost of another, right? So I think we talked enough about security. So far we've talked about crypto security, we've talked about privacy, you know, anonymity and handling your accounts, we've talked about regulation, and we talked about perspectives. Right. So one of the other problems that you brought up, CT, is that, you know, about liquidity. So we see in the market right now there is a liquidity gap, right? We see right now, if let's say I were to compare the biggest exchanges, like for example Binance or Huobi, the prices of say Bitcoin is quite different across two exchanges, right? So you're the expert on liquidity, Cecilia. So can you tell me a bit more about this issue of liquidity and how has the industry been trying to fix this problem?
Sure. So I just wanted to, you know, make a differentiation here because just now CT mentioned about liquidity. So it's not really exactly the same kind of liquidity we are looking for. What CT was talking about was on the cash liquidity of the running operational liquidity of the company, right? And right now we're going to discuss about the liquidity, which is basically the market liquidity of the crypto here. Like what David mentioned, yes, when you look at two exchange platforms simultaneously, you probably can notice that their prices, for example, like Bitcoins, will have some differentiation here. It's because we can even call crypto is in its infant or baby stage, you know. So liquidity tends to be fragmented. It's not like the traditional markets that, you know, everything is centralized into a single exchange. Prices are distorted. It's not transparent. I mean, it's transparent if you're on it, but it's not transparent on how other exchanges are projecting it. So it's distorted across the different platform. And it's because there's no single point of benchmark here that, you know, what is the fair value of certain coins. And there are some coins that is listed on some exchange but not listed on some exchange. So it tends to have a lot of distortion, discrepancy here across the various platforms. And over at Broctagon, we are trying to address, we understand this problem. We try to resolve this by, you know, having Nexus that actually aggregates liquidity from various sources, for example, like Binance, like Huobi, and, you know, so we try to aggregate, for example, like Bitcoin, right? So we try to aggregate the prices into a single source that you can view on Nexus. And that's where you see, oh, okay, so actually, this should be the fair value of Bitcoin then. You know, we try, because just now we also said that Binance is one of the biggest already, and a lot of activities and transactions are happening on the major exchanges. So we try to aggregate liquidity from certain big exchanges, which probably represent about 80% of the transactions already. And then after that, you see a fair price coming out, you see a transparent market, and a very, very deep order book on Nexus. So this is what we are trying to do on Broctagon.
I see. Okay. But you know, when we talked just now, we spoke to CT about, you know, the practices of Holdenot emulating certain financial structures. Does what you have described, you know, for Nexus, right, emulate any structures that we know currently in the market? Like, is this a tested and proven method that, you know, that you know works at least, you know, maybe in the traditional financial industry or something like that?
So what we can say that crypto is probably in the very early stage of what the forex market that we all know very, very well now. We used to have because forex is basically determined by the banks, right? And so we can see that this crypto actually mimic the early days of the forex, and this forex now has been all consolidated into different liquidity pool where, you know, you get very fair pricing across the different banks, and the banks price it in the pool. So it kind of give me the feeling that it will move towards the way of the Forex, foreign exchange markets, and become more transparent as more participant and more understanding, and we get more liquidity in the industry.
Perfect, right. I think this coincides really greatly with our goal, with the World Book's goal of trying to establish a universal sort of liquidity standard, right, for all of people, right? If that happens, I think, in terms of price point, the whole industry will benefit, right? We talk about payment solutions, we talk about exchanges, the limits are boundless, right? We can have some sort of standard that everybody can talk about. Right. I'd like to take the conversation a little different direction here. I think we've pretty much, talked about the problems that are affecting crypto today, right? And that's the name of the podcast, which is Crypto Now, right? Let's talk a little bit more about holding on, right? We've seen that crypto has been a little bearish recently, right, since December. So, 2022, we still don't know what's going to happen this year, right? So what are some of the goals for holding on in 2022?
Okay, so I'd like to firstly say first, not financial advice, but okay, no matter crypto being bullish or bearish, right, the mission for Holonaut remains the same ever since we started back in April 2019. Our mission has always been to help individual investors get the most out of their cryptocurrencies and unlock its full value via yield farming instead of only profiting from off-price increments. So what we mean by off-price increments is, for example, you buy one Bitcoin at 30K, the next moment it jumps to 40 and 50K. That's the off-price increment itself, the off-price increment of 30 to 40-50%. But that is an extremely volatile movement, and that is an extremely risky movement, which out of 100 people, probably only 5 to 10 people would be able to capture those gains. They call it the survivorship bias, but I wouldn't go into it in depth. Yep. So we are allowing investors to be, to hold the crypto for a long term, because as you can see from the past data, right, if you have held through the crashes in 2017, even in the minor crash in 2019 itself, right, $1,000 in Bitcoin in 2017, right, would be worth more than $10,000 right now if you have just held it through, even though it crashed more than 50%. So for ourselves, right, we also strive to continue educating the masses about crypto and how the adoption of crypto would eventually be able to solve the world's money and technological problems. So people can not only easily, earn interest on their crypto like Bitcoin, Ethereum, USDC, USDT, but they can come to our website and then they can go through all the different guides where we go through guides on how you can take advantage of DeFi strategies, how there are different apps that allow you to expand your yield even further, or how you can, as simple as a deposit or withdraw on the Holonaut platform itself.
Yeah. I see. Wow. Okay. Yeah. So, one of the things that, we spoke previously before the call, right? And you told me certain, Holonaut is, it's a very interesting platform, right? You share with me some key, special features of Holonaut that I still find fascinating, right? For example, the fixed term deposits versus the open term deposit. Right? Can you tell us, our viewers here, our listeners here, right? Can you tell us a little bit more about these features and what they do?
Yeah, sure, no problem. So one thing to note over here, right, is that lots of users actually come to us and they ask us this one question: why are your fixed term deposits lower interest rates than the open term deposits itself? But Usually, what you get is that the open term deposits, they have a lower interest rate than the fixed deposits, but it's actually the opposite for us. But how we would like to actually let users, what we actually let users know that we are actually open to investors from investors or users who are interested to earn interest on the platform. We are open to users of all levels itself. If you have a dollar in Bitcoin, $5 in Bitcoin, fine. You can even come to earn interest on our open term deposits. If you are a whale, you have millions of dollars in Bitcoin, you can come to our fixed term deposits where you will earn actually a higher interest rate as compared to our open term deposits. This is because, right, our open term deposits, right, they are actually subject to different tiering systems itself. So Like for example, for USDT and USDC, right, the first tier, right, actually allows you to earn up to 12.73% APY on your first 25K. So subsequently, right, the interest rate will actually drop. To only about 4% in the last tier itself. Yeah. So if you have larger deposits, go for the fixed term. But if you have a smaller deposit and you want to grow your crypto, go for the open term deposit where you can withdraw at any point of time.
Yeah. Makes sense. And you know, I also heard about this. I mean, you didn't elaborate on it, but you spoke about this preferred interest payout feature, right? Are there competitors doing this? Is this something that's unique to just Holden on?
This, if I'm not wrong, this feature is actually unique to Holden on itself. I don't hear of any other platforms that do it. Probably BlockFi does it, but I haven't really explored their platform because I've heard some users talking about BlockFi having this certain feature. But this feature is actually, we feel it's actually quite unique to our platform because we allow you to earn interest on another crypto using a base asset itself. So how this actually works, right, is, for example, for yourself, right, if you are very reactive, if you are a very emotional trader and you feel like more than 40 or 50% losses, right, it's not going to cut it out for you, right, because you will just panic sell the moment it dips, right, then this feature is for you because it allows you to dollar cost average into volatile cryptocurrencies like Bitcoin and Ethereum itself. So it actually stands out amongst the competition, right, because, right, people can just deposit, let's say, $10,000 in USDT or USDC. They will continue to earn 12.73% interest on the stablecoin itself. But on the back end daily, right, because we accrue our interest daily, on the back end, we will actually automatically swap whatever they accrue for the day into the crypto of their choice. So let's say today you choose to earn in Bitcoin. So every day we will swap according to the price of Bitcoin at that point of time. And then on Monday, we will pay you out one lump sum. So this is actually quite effective, right, for people to hold their assets for the long term, right? Because in moments of surges, in moments of dips, right, you continue buying and buying and buying until your price averages to way below what is the current price at the current moment. So the returns you see would not be very astronomical, like 30 or 50%. But as long as you can see returns of 10 to 20% per year, and that return beats inflation, I would say, why not? Try our future. Yeah.
Well, that all makes sense, right? So I believe that's the last question I had for you, right? Thank you so much to both of you, CC and Cecilia. It's been great having you both on our show. Once again, the Crypto Now podcast is an extension of the Nexus World Book Movement, which is the world's first crypto straight-through processing network that is a universal liquidity standard for digital assets. Join us on the next episode as we continue to explore the world of crypto. This is David, and you've been listening to Crypto Now, the pulse of the industry. Thank you.